presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks.
Thrilling adventure, intense exciting, tingling mystery.
Everybody, welcome back to Comic Dorks. This is Comic Dorks episode 13, lucky number 13. My name is Scott Johnson, and we are back just in time for some breaking news. More on that in a minute. Joining me tonight, Steven Schleicher.
I'm Batman. Oh. No, I'm not Batman.
No, you're not going to be Batman. We already picked one. He's a guy you're not sure if you feel good about it yet or not. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Also with us, Mark Spagnuolo. Hello, Mark.
I'm Ben Affleck.
Spoiler.
Soaps.
Spoiler alert. I don't know why that's still playing something. Anyway.
Oh, I like it.
It's not now.
Kind of big in Hollywood is what it sounded like.
It kind of did. We're back. We got a new show. Scott Kurtz is not here. Had some stuff to take care of. Was not able to make it tonight, but we'll be thinking about him. And
we miss him already.
One of us will swear hard or something just to remind us of him. And we have this.
Fuck you guys.
Huh? See?
Huh? Huh?
Still have that. I have that to handy. So welcome back, everybody. It's good to be back. We got a live chat room. Thanks, you guys, for coming, and we appreciate having you around. Should we just get straight to the big, gnarly news that happened today?
What are we waiting for?
All right.
Let's do it.
Hang on.
The stolen plans of the Vibrator were destroyed, along with the only two criminals who knew how to operate it.
All right. Big news of the day, of the month, of the whatever. Of the show, breaking news, Ben Affleck is the new Batman, confirmed. This sounds like rumor, but it's confirmed, right, Steven?
Oh, no.
Like,
this came out just about 5-10 minutes before we started recording, came officially out of Warner Brothers, that Ben Affleck will be playing Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. Batman, in the sequel to Man of Steel, currently titled, what is it, Batman versus Superman, or whatever. Superman versus Batman, or, oh boy, look at all the geeks having a fit right now.
Right. So previously Daredevil. Married to Elektra in real life.
Yeah.
That whole period of Marvel filmmaking is still kind of a stain on the brain a little bit. So no one loves that movie, or maybe some do, but most hate it.
Here's the deal. If you have not seen the director's cut of Daredevil, you're missing out on a fairly decent movie.
Mm. Well, what would you say if I told you that I actually kind of like the theatrical one? I haven't seen the other one, so I'll probably even like that more. But I wasn't a hater at the time. I thought it was all right.
I thought the theatrical version was all right. I thought that there were some moments that didn't work. But overall, I thought it was fine.
Elektra's worse.
Oh, yeah. We watched that at home one night, and the wife and I were both like, oh, dude.
It's real bad.
Go back to, what was it, Alias.
No doubt. So Mark, you're a Batman fan. You like the Batman.
Sure.
Do you think is this good or bad? Because basically what we're doing is we're entering into a period in Ben Affleck's career where he's actually kind of on the rise. Like,
well, yeah, that's the point. It's like, are we talking old Ben Affleck or now Ben Affleck? I mean, they're two completely different careers practically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Ben Affleck that we know now, I don't have any problem with this at all. In the hands of the right director, I don't know. I think he could actually do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be Scott Snyder in this. Yeah. Kevin Smith must be having a fit right now. Because, you know, Ben Affleck used to be in all of Kevin Smith's early movies and is always giving him crap, and it has that Fat Man on Batman podcast, and now his one of his friends is Batman.
Yeah. Well, they were in Daredevil together, remember? He was the doctor scientist man that was showing him how to use his sticks or something.
If we're talking about current Ben Affleck, I mean, he really is on a roll. I mean, he just came off of Argo as a producer, director, actor.
Yep.
Academy Award winner. His acting chops since, what was it? The Town? Was
the
that
Town,
what it was?
He also directed that and acted in it, and he was really good in that as well.
He was really good in that. Yeah. So
the Geely days are over. We're not dealing with that stuff anymore.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a really good dramatic range, I think, for a character that's kind of moody and brooding. I think he could certainly pull that off.
Do you think he's got the – not that you need to be older, and in fact, in this case, running around with Henry Cavill, you're probably looking younger is a better thing, but does he have the – Are we okay with a Bruce Wayne that isn't necessarily all cut and buffed out? Are we okay with that?
How do we know? I mean, obviously, in the press release, it did state that they were looking for an older Batman.
Yeah.
And, you know, considering that they quoted from The Dark Knight Returns, I don't know if they're going to go that old.
Mm-hmm.
But Affleck may be just at that right age. What is he, like
40,
45 something? Or something?
Let's see. Ben Affleck. I'm going to take a look real quick and we will confirm or deny it. Born in 72, that would make him 40?
Wow, he's younger than we are, Scott.
Yeah, weird, right?
Man, no,
but
not,
he's the age of my depressed. Wife. It's, now I feel like I'm sleeping with Ben Affleck.
I'm suddenly depressed.
I'm sure she'll appreciate that comment.
Yeah. This doesn't get back to her suddenly. It just occurs to me.
I actually think it's good. I think having I like the idea of the Batman who is maybe not super cut and buff, but when he's as Batman, he's going to be a badass. He's got technology on his side. Part of his strength is the suit, you know, when he gets the cowl on. So it's
sure.
I don't know. I think this is actually, to me, a good possibility for Batman.
Mm.
Now, I don't think Ben Affleck looks dumpy, and Christian Bale certainly wasn't all roided out like Hugh Jackman is in The Wolverine.
Yeah. A little more in Begins, right? Like the second two, not so much. He was thinner and gaunter and whatever.
Well, and I think in the movie world, when we see Bruce Wayne, I don't necessarily think Bruce Wayne looks good as a big, buff, burly dude. He has to look like a rich guy, who's not in terrible shape, but just, keeps himself healthy and goes to the gym a couple days a week.
And a sad rich guy, like a rich guy with issues and problems and looking like he's got to put on this face of, hey, I'm the philanthropist, I'm the town hero because I'm paying for everything in these dark times or whatever, and I'm standing up to, crime from the corporate side of things, but then at night I don this cowl and I do my thing. Affleck could probably, we were all okay with Michael Keaton for a while. If that was okay, this is probably okay.
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, remember Michael Keaton right before that was Mr. Mom.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Multiplicity and all that crap. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was really doing some doofy, silly roles. And then suddenly he's announced as Batman and people are like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. Yep. And then everyone realized that they were getting a Batman movie and they finally said, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. I think it's the same thing that's going on here. Right. I mean, people are going to get to see Batman versus Superman on the screen, something that fanboys have been dreaming about for decades, since the 80s.
Yeah.
And now people are going to get to see it. And I understand. I mean, right now, the reaction on Twitter is mostly negative.
Yeah.
Reaction on our website is mostly negative. Direct mentions to me are mostly negative.
Yeah.
People are just hating the idea. But I think that, just like you said, with Michael Keaton, people are going to warm up to this pretty quick.
Well, it's easy to take. All right. So it's easy to just lump him into the pile of stuff that we think he did that wasn't great. You know, all of his previous stuff, Clear and Present Danger, whatever it was called, the Jack Ryan movie that wasn't very good.
Yeah.
We did it for Film Sack, and I can't even remember the name. It was so unforgettable. But really, between Good Will Hunting and all the Kevin Smith stuff, there was Pearl Harbor, and there was just kind of crap. Geely
okay,
and all
now
these
let me
things.
Let me ask you this. Is that the fault of the actor, or is that the fault of a really crappy script, right?
A crappy... Yeah, I would.
Because let's face it, this last Batman movie that we just had wasn't that fantastic.
No, it certainly wasn't as good as its previous two outings. You're right about that. Yeah, no, there's so much more that goes into this. It's not as simple as just straight up, hey, Affleck just kind of sucks. He's not a good actor. I think he's always been a fine actor. His stuff, I think what they're doing, this is from Hollywood's perspective, they're trading on the new respect for Affleck.
Yeah. Right.
That's what they're trading on here. They're saying, all right, this guy just won best director? Or is it film?
No.
Best movie.
Just best film.
So that's right. People were pissed because he didn't get director.
He was co-producer on that. So
and I'll tell you
he felt a little snubbed.
And in February, March, we were all rooting for him. Everybody was rooting for him. Like, man, what a screw job. Argo was amazing. He should have been nominated for best director. Didn't get it. This is a total ripoff. At least they got best picture. Blah, blah, blah. Everyone's in his corner. The minute you say this guy's going to be Batman, the hallowed movie character, all the nerds turn. And they're turning because suddenly their brains are flashing back. Daredevil, that wasn't very good. Daredevil was really bad, right? That was bad. Okay, well, we can't be happy about this at all. I mean, we were okay with Johnny Storm turning into Captain America because that was different somehow. But this is bad.
We had a big internet Twitter discussion today about Schadenfreude and how we all just like to crap on people and see the worst things come out in people. And when Ben Affleck is the underdog, everybody's rooting for him. The minute something good happens to him, it's like, screw that guy.
Yeah.
Screw him. Why does he deserve to play Batman? I should be Batman.
Right.
But where do you guys fall in the concept of having an unknown play a beloved character as opposed to someone who's an A-list actor who's bringing baggage with him? That's the only thing. My only apprehension about this is the fact that the baggage is there. Right. I love it when they take a new actor that we don't really know, and then he just becomes that character for me.
Yeah, in a way, probably in some way, Christian Bale is that for us because I mean, Christian Bale had been working. He's in plenty of movies. Most notably at the time, I think, was American Psycho and maybe that Dragon movie. What was it called? Rain of Fire. But small stuff and a lot of independent stuff. So my first exposure to Christian Bale was when he was like 13 and was in Empire of the Sun, which is, you know, not a good thing to compare against a Batman film. So in a very real way, he was kind of a newcomer. He had some chops and everybody knew it, but he was coming kind of out of nowhere to be Batman. And I think that did work well.
Good for you.
In this case, though, we all have these expectations that this is Ben Affleck. He's the guy that's sticking animal crackers in, Liv Tyler's belly button in Armageddon. He's the goofball playing Daredevil. He's mostly doing rom-coms for a long time there. Like, we all kind of have this thing built into us. But if somebody else is seeing Batman, like, I'm trying to imagine, if you're 15 or 16, do you care about Argo? Do you care about the town? Yeah. Do you even know about any of this?
You know what? I bet a lot of 15-year-olds have seen the town.
Think so?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Just because of the crime spree angle to it.
Yeah.
Well, and how messed up
I don't think that works against him.
No.
These are really good things. No, I don't. You're right. I mean, there's probably a lot of kids going, who the hell's Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm just saying
this movie comes out, a lot of people are going to be going, well, a lot of kids might be saying, who's Ben Affleck?
I'm just saying they don't have the other bad history that we have with him.
Right.
They're not thinking of Geely because that's forever ago and nobody cares.
Nobody's thinking about that anymore.
Nobody is anymore. Right? I bring it up because I'm old now and this is just it's what I do. So
let me explode your brain, Scott.
Do it.
Ben Affleck is now playing Batman,
and
he's also played Superman.
Wait, what?
If you have not seen the 2006 movie Hollywoodland, where he played George Reeves, who was Superman in the 1950s television show.
Oh, that's right.
Ben Affleck is Superman and Batman.
What?
Nice.
Oh, I should have seen. You know what? My brain did get exploded, but not as exploded as it got when I first realized that The Prestige was a Batman versus Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
And that freaking Black Widow was in it too. Like, that was a big old superhero movie and we just didn't know it at the time.
If you guys haven't seen Hollywoodland, go check it out. I mean, Ben Affleck plays a super depressed George Reeves as he ends his career at, you know, just known as Superman.
Yeah, when he ended up committing suicide, didn't he, George Reeves?
Well, that's what the whole story of Hollywoodland is about. Did he commit suicide? Did somebody kill him? Did the mob kill him? Did his wife kill him?
Oh, man.
It's a whole mystery.
I didn't realize all this was going on in the life of George Reeves.
Oh, yeah. It's a good movie. And Affleck put on a ton of weight for that movie.
Really?
Yeah, he is bulk or fat? No, bloated and out of shape, like an actor who used to be buff but has gone to seed.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of want to see it now.
No, you really want to see it.
So, speaking of Batman, real quick, if I can find it here. I think it's this.
I'm afraid that crime fighting allows me only the luxury of...
No, that's Adam West. Hold on, where is it? Batman and Robin.
Holy...
No, that would be obviously not him. Where's the... I have a Superman clip of George Reeves from way back in the day. Here we go.
Superman!
No. that sounded like Pooperman, didn't it?
Pooperman!
Oh, here it is.
Lex Luthor has Superman trapped.
Nope, that isn't it either.
Come on, kids.
That's not it either. I don't know where it is.
Welcome to the clip show.
Somewhere in there is a thing where George Reeves does some stuff, so kids at home could figure out who we're talking about, but now it's too late. But anyway, point is, that is pretty weird that he's played. Well, you know, look, I'm looking at his IMDb photo. That guy right there, if I didn't have any back history, I don't know who Ben Affleck is a new name for me. That guy right there could totally be Bruce Wayne. There's no problem.
Yeah. Throw some gray in his hair and you're spot on.
Yeah, and he's already, I mean, that's an older photo a little bit, but he's already kind of got, look, there's a photo from the town just below that where he's got short cropped hair.
Mm-hmm.
That could be Bruce Wayne.
Totally.
No problem. Yeah. So
he's got the butt chin and everything.
I am choosing to not be an internet troll about this. I am choosing to have an open mind and see how this goes.
I wonder what Scott Kurtz would say about all this if he were here.
I think he'd be all right with it. We'll ask him. We sound like we're doing this posthumously. We'll get his opinion. But I have the feeling he's okay with it. That's my gut reaction. He's still not okay with Zack Snyder's treatment of Superman, so this may all be a moot point for him.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is an okay choice. Here's the big question, though, and Steven, you may have some insight on this. The Justice League movie, supposed to come out in 2015.
Yes.
How likely do you think it is that Ben Affleck will participate in writing and directing that film?
Here's the deal. Way back a few months ago, way back in the dark days of the internet, there was this rumor going around that Ben Affleck was going to direct the Justice League movie. But everyone was like, well, you know, Ben is kind of this actor-director guy, and if he doesn't get to play a part in the movie, he's probably not going to direct it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, he came out and says, you know, I'm not directing this movie. Well, now, if he's playing Batman and this is a lead-in to the Justice League movie, these rumors are going to start popping up again, and I bet that they're founded on some truth now.
Mm. Just took a while.
I'm going to bet that we're going to see Ben Affleck within months of the release of the Man of Steel 2, Geekgasm Boogaloo. I bet we're going to see an announcement that he's been hired as the director for Justice League.
I would not be surprised. And that is a huge catch. That's Joss Whedon level excitement. Because we know he can direct perhaps better than he can act. Now, is he going to be in his own movie? Absolutely, because now it makes sense, right?
Well, and, you know, in the first Justice League story, it only has Superman and Batman in there for a panel. You know, Batman, they're basically saying, Batman, we have this big monster getting ready to invade. We need your help. And he's like, I'm busy in Gotham. Leave me alone. And then they call Superman. He's like, I'm busy in space punching meteorites.
Yeah.
And that's the only appearance of Batman and Superman in the first Justice League story.
Right.
So they could do something like that and keep the FaceTime to a minimum. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to do that.
Right.
But I could easily see that happening if there was an issue with Affleck splitting his time and doing an effective job between both.
Right. So it'll be interesting. And we'll see if Henry Cavill carries over his role or not. It seems like
he will. That. He is. He is doing it. Perry White, Samuel L. Jackson is back. Or not Samuel L. Jackson. Lawrence Fishburne, Diane Lane, right. Amy Adams. They're all back reprising their roles. So they're already on.
But we don't know about Justice League if Cavill's in for that or not, do we?
No, but, you know, three-picture deal, it would make sense.
That does make sense. Oh, that's true. I forgot about that.
And, you know, we're doing a Flash television show, a Flash movie. You know, all of this is good time for DC and Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling a little bit better about it with the brooding part of it. The part where Bruce Wayne is kind of goofed up. I think Affleck himself is a little goofed up, and I think he plays goofed up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how this goes. Everyone strap in.
It's fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Settle down, people.
Yeah, everyone relax. I mean, who do you think Mateo's? This is the best part. When that kid grows up, who's going to be his Batman? It's not going to be Ben Affleck. It's going to be somebody totally new we haven't even thought of.
Some little teen douchebag.
Yeah, some little wiener will be in that thing.
Justin Bieber.
Yeah, Bieber will be old enough by then to be doing acting gigs, assuming he doesn't kill himself
now,
first.
Listen, Mark, this is what you have to do. You have to do the same thing that I did to my son, is I got a pair of those prop replica Batman handcuffs.
Okay.
And my son was looking at them. I put them on there. He goes, Dad, where'd you get these? And I was like, well, don't tell anyone, but I'm Batman. And for I didn't think that he believed me. I mean, he was like 4.5, 5.
Yeah.
And like a year later, he's like, Dad, I kind of told somebody you're Batman. Are we in danger?
Oh my gosh.
It's like a whole year later.
And blow my cover.
That's hilarious, so
That's what you need to do when he gets at the age to remember these things.
Here's that meeting.
You know, just show him a picture of Batman. You've kind of got that dark brooding look.
I could do it.
Listen,
happy at home, but at night.
Here's that meeting. He sits down. He says, son, yeah, Dad. And he says, I'm Batman. And then Mateo goes. He'll just laugh it off.
Yeah, he's never going to lose that laugh.
Yeah, he won't even, he won't even care.
Even after puberty.
He's like, whatever, Dad. You're not going to be Batman. Anyway, so big news, everybody. Check it out. There's more stuff at majorspoilers.com where they'll detail this thing all out. And you guys should read up on that to get all that you can get in other news.
You can express your vitriol and anger.
Indeed.
And rage.
Oh, man. This is the place to do it. The internet, you know. It's the place to let it all hang out.
I feel. I hope Ben Affleck's not online tonight.
Yeah.
I hope he's not checking his Twitter feed.
I think he's to the point. I hope he's to the point now. He's got those kids, his wife. That's all a big settled deal. They're getting along. Everything seems to be going well. He's now, you know, respected for his directing ability and everything else that's going on in his life. I feel like he is to a point where he can just blow this stuff off.
I think he could look at his checking account and say, F you guys.
Yeah, I'm the one with the money, the offers, and the deals.
I'm doing all right over here.
I'm doing okay, yeah, exactly. So anyway, we'll see how that all goes. In other news, the Marvel Experience featuring a 4D motion ride.
Whee!
It's going to tour America in 2014. Before we get too far into this, what is 4D? I don't get
it. That's where like if you're going through a wind tunnel, they turn on fans and blow it on you. And if it's suddenly a mist, they spray mist down upon you.
Right.
Like a Disney ride of some sort.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Okay. They have one. We went to Legoland up in Kansas City a few weeks ago, and they had something like that. And the kids just lost their crap. They thought it was the best thing in the world.
Well, why? Okay. 4D,
so you got 3D, plus you got the added element of getting, you know, hopefully sanitary water pouring down upon you.
Great.
Poop water.
So what they're telling me is we should teach a new generation of children that the fourth dimension is fake, you know, water spraying in your face and smells, yes, and things like that. Great.
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic. Scheduled to start in spring 2014, the Marvel Experience will be a $30 million theme park of sorts that will travel around America. So it's going to pick up and move. It'll visit 20 to 24 cities. They dug up some more details about convention/theme parks that Marvel and Hero Adventures are currently working on, and it all looks rather thrilling. If you're a Marvel fan, the cities that will be visited have not been announced yet, but they hope to have locations available that are the 50,000 square feet variety. They have a dome that will cover the Marvel Experience in that same sort of space. So interesting, right?
That's a hell of an undertaking.
Yeah, it is.
I can predict some of the cities already. Yep. Orlando.
Got it. That sounds perfect.
Every city that has Six Flags.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, they can't just replace the park, though, right?
No. It's just a traveling thing. So it'll be wherever they already have theme parks established, okay, and have relationships with those theme parks. That's where it will be at. Plus, wherever the Super Bowl will be during the year that that this is going on.
Yeah.
And probably a Las Vegas venue and the Final Four venue.
Oh, I will go to the Vegas one. Like tomorrow, if it happens. Oh, my gosh.
That's just what I'm just predicting. And, of course, the major comic book convention. So you'll see it at Comic-Con. You maybe won't see it at the New York Comic-Con just because of space. But certainly San Diego Comic-Con, you'll see it there.
I don't know if I want to get water sprayed on me in Vegas, though. Like, I don't know if I trust that more.
Well, no, in Vegas, they throw stripper glitter on you.
I swear, honey, it was a ride.
Yeah. For a truly fourth dimension experience, hooker glitter. Great.
It was a 3DD.
Double D. Four double D.
4D, yeah. 4D motorboating.
Perfect. Perfect. Anyway, it does sound interesting. Sounds expensive. And this is my prediction. My prediction is Marvel is just gearing up to do things with Marvel and Star Wars that we have no idea what's coming, but I think they are just getting ready to launch all kinds of craziness at their traditional theme parks. This traveling thing kind of fixes the other issue of we're only in, you know, two major cities. And then, you know, locations across the world. But this fixes that. You don't have to just affix this to Orlando or to Anaheim. You can literally pick it up and move it.
Right.
I think they're going to go nuts. I think this is just the point of the spear, and there's Star Wars stuff coming that we haven't even talked about. They got to get that next movie out, have that be a giant success, and have all that stuff kicking in. And then suddenly it's going to be all Star Wars all the time and a billion ways to get it. Oh, it's going to be nuts. It's going to be crazy.
Oh, yeah, they're certainly got the marketing down on this.
Yeah. So speaking of Marvel and Disney, Disneyland to get a special Thor the Dark World exhibit later this year. When's that movie coming out? When does that due? Is that this fall?
I think it's November.
Okay. So we're getting that before the end of the year. There aren't details regarding what it will actually be. This person who wrote this says, my hope is that it will involve riding a horse down a rainbow bridge where you can then be greeted by Idris Elba in Golden Armor. Is it Idris? I don't know how you say his name.
I don't know.
He was in, he's in lots of things, but he was in The Wire. Anyway, he'll then transport you to a world where you battle frost giants with a magical hammer. That's pretty unlikely, though, I'm guessing. Difficult to put off. Anyway, pull off, rather. This is coming as well, so your stagnant hold still thing will happen. And here's my other prediction. Disney, they will start doing this on a regular basis. So one of these things will come out, and they'll just replace the whole thing with the Avengers set.
Yes.
And then move on to the next one.
I thought they did something with Iron Man where they had all the Iron Man suits out on display. They might do something like that, but they have that over at Universal. I don't know if they still have it. They have that E.T. ride, and then they also have the Harry Potter ride where you're like zapping things and flying around the story. They probably, if they're going to do a ride, I would imagine Disney would do something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Would you take your child there, Mark, and let him ride the Thor ride?
Well, rides, it's a weird thing. I don't even know if we want to get into it. I am scared to death of park rides. Mm. It's just one of my weird fears, and I'm afraid I'm going to transfer that fear to my son.
For sanitary reasons or decapitation reasons?
Falling out and, you know, falling 70 feet to the ground reasons. You know, but we definitely are going to do theme parks with the kid. I can't wait till he gets a little bit older so we can actually have an excuse to go to things like this.
Yeah, then they're more enjoyable, too, when they're older, for sure.
Yeah, totally. So we won't be going anytime soon, but maybe in a couple of years.
So you have a thing with heights? Is that a thing with you?
Definitely. I have a thing with like this Marvel thing. Like, to me, it's like there is nothing safer than mechanical rides that travel the country and get set up every couple of days. That sounds safe. Let's do that.
No, I'm with you, dude, on that. Like, I don't like that part.
Carnival rides. Have you ever seen the people that work at carnivals?
Oh, they're weird. They usually have one eye and they're named things like Zeke. I mean,
and not to be offensive to them, but does it look like they give a shit about my safety on that little tilt-a-whirl that I'm about to get on? No,
especially your safety. Like they have a weird. We have this thing over just at the park near us every year. They call it Pony Express Days because we happen to live on a street that used to be a Pony Express trail. And so they do this big deal, and they bring all these carnies out, and they set up all these old rickety German rides. And for like a week, people are ralphing on these things and, you know, spinning around like crazy. Nothing looks mechanically sound, and nobody running them looks trustworthy in any possible way. And they literally live in tiny trailers in the park for a week.
Oh, yeah.
They don't go home somewhere. They're not in some cool hotel someplace. Nope. They're living in, like, tiny little bunk beds. In the worst looking conditions ever. So yeah, dude, like if they want this to be mainstream, now people get super excited about it. They do have to break that carny barrier and make sure people feel good about whatever Disney money is getting thrown behind it. So it's got, you know, good, solid experiences, clean, safe.
So seriously, when we're talking about a 50,000 foot dome for this Marvel experience thing, it's a projection and you're watching a movie and the seats shake around and they spray water and or glitter or bubbles on you.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, that's not like it's going to be a safety issue thing.
Yeah. I think what Mark's saying, and I agree, because I have irrational fears about heights. Like, get me on top of a Ferris wheel and I want to die.
I can't do it. The same way. No, I'm the same way.
It's a healthy fear. I know in some cases it's overblown, but just my choice.
It's part of survival.
Well, when they say that they're describing this thing as a theme park of sorts, so I can't imagine it's just that one experience. They've got to be doing something else.
They'll have like Thor walking around or Spider-Man or the Hulk. 50,000
square feet. They got to do something with that thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some rides or something. But anyway.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see. And so, way to go, Disney, I suppose. We'll see how well you pull this off in both
cases.
Oh,
they'll do it. It's Disney.
Will they? Okay.
Look at their theme parks, how popular their theme parks are.
That's true. Yeah. And they continually are. They don't really have the dip that some theme parks do. They just keep going.
Their Imagineers are fantastic, out-of-this-world people. And if they're coming up with something that's going to blow your mind, believe me, it'll blow your mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some controversial news here. Heroes of Cosplay controversy. Apparently there are people upset over the reality show. You guys hear about this show?
I have, but I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't either.
Yeah, same here.
Everybody keeps saying, a friend of the program, Bill Duran, should be in this because he's doing stuff. But if these rumors are true, maybe we're glad he's not. I don't know. They're complaining about the way it portrays the hobby and those people's lives in the show, lack of male contestants and other things people like to complain about. Here's the deal. If we want mainstream coverage and or content that is about geekier things, the things we hold geekiest in our lives, we need to be prepared for this. And that is that they are going to take the things that right now are kind of underground and cool and grassroots, and they're going to mainstream that stuff up to appeal to the biggest audience possible, to sell the most ads possible, so they can even afford to make the damn thing.
Right.
And that means hot chicks and dumb stories and bad reality tropes. It's just the way it's going to be.
Right. And the other thing, too, is you have to realize that reality television, like what this is very inexpensive to produce. That's why we have a glut of them right now. The other thing that people need to realize is, you know, I could say, you know, Scott is, and then later in our discussion, say boner or something. And then what the editors are going to do later in post is they're going to grab clips and they're going to edit me together to where I say Scott is a boner.
Right.
Right. And that is exactly what happens in these reality television series. So, you know, on the one hand, there's a lot of people. So in this argument, there are some people in the cosplay community are basically calling some of the people on this show sellouts and how dare they do this and how they're falsely representing. It's editing, people. They need to stop that. I mean, that, you know, I doubt that people intentionally make themselves in any reality TV series look like an asshole.
No, they never do. And I've talked to actual people, contestants on actual reality shows, who off the air have said to me, look, it was a cool experience. We had fun and everything, but 90% of that drama you heard about A was complete garbage, and that stuff about B was made up, and the thing about C never got talked about, which was real, and they decided not to use it. Like, this is just the way this stuff works. So as geek culture bleeds into the mainstream, for good or for ill, and I would argue ill most of the time, it's going to get treated the way any of this other content does. We're not special. They're not going to treat it any differently. So Heroes of Cosplay isn't going to be about some, you know, overweight guy from Ohio making the coolest Johnny Storm costume he's ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about some totally hot girl making a skimpy outfit and walking around Comic-Con in that thing and her quirky lifestyle and her weird attitude and her funny laugh. That's how it's going to be. Yeah. I'm not saying that's good. I'm not even saying it's bad. I'm just saying them's the truth.
And if you look at some of the at the shows that are on, I mean, you've got Kevin Smith's Comic Book Men kind of does the same thing where they put these guys in antics that they would normally not do. You had Who is the Biggest Geek, I think, was a show on a couple of seasons ago that kind of did the same thing. And we see the same thing happening here in the Heroes of Cosplay.
Yeah. I haven't seen – where is this anyway? What channel do we
have? Sci-Fi Channel.
Sci-Fi, all right.
I think it's like a 6-episode or an 8-episode series.
If it's, you know, I personally wish we'd have more documentary style stuff like this. And
if it was true documentary and exploring it, that would be awesome, because we've featured some videos over at Major Spoilers of these people at the shows, and the costumes are fantastic. And I have a lot of respect for these people who spend hours upon hours, and some of them, like Bill, like Chinbeard, who make their career doing cosplay and building props and building things for people who want to do this. So I have a lot of respect for those people.
I do too.
And ultimately, anything people. That like that, you know, those people.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything I think that is in this sort of beloved niche nerdy thing that we really enjoy that gets a treatment on just regular TV, most of the time it's going to be shit because it's going to be done in a way that's appealing to people who aren't into that, but who would find a half an hour of this entertaining. How do you make it entertaining? You do something that you make it sensationalized.
Yeah.
Because if it was that entertaining, these people would probably be doing it, and they're not. Yeah. They're just enjoying watching other weird people do it. So you got to make it weirder than it is. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on TV. Yeah. So you're right. Documentaries, you know, weird independent movies and stuff. There's so many good things that do portray cosplay and live action role play way better than something like this could ever do.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's a bunch of Netflix documentaries about various hero things. What's the one where those guys that sit out in front of the Chinese theater and get pictures?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Gosh, I've got that one. It's a really good one.
Really interesting, and it isn't exploitive. You're not sitting there going, "Man, these people are weird," but you are definitely getting into, you know, their lives and understanding kind of where their heads are at. And it's very, very interesting. It's not always positive. It's not always negative. But at least you feel like you're getting some truth in there. And, you know, I think nerd culture and nerd film / documentary just needs its Ken Burns. It needs its voice. Somebody out there who's just there for the truth, ma'am. You know,
one of the contestants. Like one of the contestants. She actually does an internet show, I think, for Nerdist called "Try This at Home," where they actually show you how to build a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. And she was in, and I'm trying to look up the documentary really quick, but it was like something about Heroes of Comic-Con, I think is what the title of it was. Mm. And it was about these people who were going to Comic-Con to really try to make it. And it's a serious documentary. You got one guy who wants to try to break it as an artist, and another person who wants to do this. And then you've got this Holly girl, I think that's who it is, she was doing her whole cosplay thing with the big masquerade that they do there. And they show how her team is putting together these costumes and the stress that they're going through trying to get it to work, and how ultimately they had all this fun at Comic-Con. And in her case, it actually led to studio work in designing Hollywood costumes.
Yeah, that's right. Steve Hammaker, who's in the chat, amazing cartoonist and colorist. Steve, is it just plox.com? I want to give you a plug while you're here in the chat room. Anyway, he's doing an amazing new comic. People should be reading it.
You know what? I think I read one of the entire series that he had on the toilet.
Yeah, it's good. Dude, he's good. if all you're going to do, even if all you do is read Bone, the colorized Bone, it's worth your time. And he did all the color work on that.
It was so good. Nicole bought it for me. And for some reason, it just landed in the bathroom. And that's how I read the entire thing at like 5 minutes at a time. But it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good. He says, first of all, it's Plox, PLOX-comic.com. This is his new webcomic that is really, really good. Guys, way above everyone else's pay rate. It's amazing. So the first chapter's up there, but the documentary, I think, is that Mergen Spurlock.
Yeah, yeah. It's called Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope is what it is. That's right. And it's really good. I know it's only got a 7-star rating, but it's a really good documentary to watch. If people who want to find out, you know, if you're not – I mean, obviously, you're listening because you have an interest in comic books, but if you want to see how serious fans take this experience, you really should watch it. It's a really, really good documentary. Features a lot of celebrities in there talking about what Comic-Con means. It's really, really good.
I heard somebody say the other day that the way you get Mergen Spurlock to be successful again in documentaries is you make him eat McDonald's for the entire documentary, no matter what the subject is. So you just go, oh, he's at Comic-Con and he's eating McDonald's every day. Look how fat he's getting. Yeah.
His pomegranate one, the advertising the advertising one is really good too.
I missed that one. I didn't.
Yeah, you should go check it out. I know you're watching a lot of documentaries, but I would go check out that one too. It just talks about commercialism in movies and TV. Okay.
And it worked on me because I drink Palm Wonderful all the time now, and I had never even considered it until I watched that movie. And I'm like, that bottle looks attractive. I'm going to try that juice, and it was really good.
And you even know you were being.
Yeah,
sold.
Totally.
That's crazy.
Willingly, I fell victim to it.
Right, you are.
And that shit's expensive too.
A willing victim. That's great. all right. So anyway, there's that. Not a lot of actual like big breaking crazy comic book news, but as usual,
Ben Affleck is Batman.
Yeah, we heard about that one. That was a big one. And again, majorspoilers.com for more, because My guess is, this is my prediction. Steven's gonna have crap up for a long time about this.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll be following this all throughout.
Yeah.
And I'm sure someone in the next 24 hours will have to sit down and write an editorial on why this is a good thing. And don't freak out, people.
Nope.
Remember, this is not your younger version of Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
This is the wiser Academy Award winning
salt and pepper bearded Affleck.
Still married to Jennifer Garner, who's hot.
Right. She's totally hot.
I have to say, I love the fact that like a show that we do every 3 weeks just happens to be on at the right time to actually have a late breaking story.
I know, dude.
And not talk about like it like it was planned. Wow.
Not talk about it 2 weeks later.
Conspiracy theories. All right, let's get into some quick news.
The stolen plans of the Vibrator were destroyed along with the only two criminals who knew how to operate.
What I meant to push was this.
You're going to tune in on them and persuade them to change their mind.
You must be insane.
All right, that's what I meant to push. So check this out. Rocket Raccoon role offered as rumored to Bradley Cooper now. So we're off what's his name and back to Bradley Cooper. Who is XXX? I forgot his name already.
Vin Diesel. They're still talking to him for Groot or something.
Okay. Well, so now it's in Bradley Cooper's lap. I don't know, man. Whatever. That movie just needs to come out so I can see if they can pull it off. I don't care about who's in it. I don't care about these rumors. I just need to see if that movie is any good.
Regardless. Well, they're already shooting it.
Yeah,
we've already seen still photos come out from the set, so any announcements that we see right now have to be for the CG characters, the CGI characters.
Oh, right.
Groot, Rocket Raccoon, any crazy alien person.
They can do a lot of that stuff in post so they can announce these actors later, but interesting stuff. Let's see. Bad Robot releases a mystery box trailer for Stranger. Y'all see this? It's weird, and I don't know what to think.
It reminds me of a book that I read when I was in college, and I forget the author. He's kind of like Stephen King, but it kind of started out with something similar to this. So I doubt that they're adapting that book, although it would be very cool. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what Stranger is. A lot of people are mad about this trailer, though.
Why, though?
Because, you know, what's his name? J.J. Abrams is all about the mystery box. And so people are like, well, this is the mystery box that's pushed too far because you're not telling us anything about the story. So we have no idea what it's about. So we can't tell if we're excited about this or not.
I could see that, I guess. But it's compelling and interesting. And I want to see I want to see what the hell it is. And Abrams does really cool creative stuff. And he's a bit of my modern muse now, like as far as films go. When he does something like this, I get excited. I remember the trailers, the very teasery trailers for Super 8. And I remember going, what the hell is in that train? Like, you really kind of want to know. Well, this doesn't feel any different than that. You know, this is just another thing. And what are you supposed to do with a teaser? Show them everything or tease?
Exactly.
You're supposed to. It's called a teaser for a reason. So I don't. I'm not all hating on this. I think it looks cool. I don't know what to think about it. It is interesting that it's sandwiched here between Star Trek and Star Wars work. Does that mean a film from him between Hollywood epics?
It's coming from Bad Robot, so it doesn't necessarily have J.J. as a director. He could be a producer. Could be a television show, for all we know.
Could be Carlton Cuse and some other guy making a short. Or so. For all we know, we have no idea. They haven't said.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it looks cool. If you haven't seen
it, could be a live-action Q-Bert movie.
Mark, did you see it?
I did not.
You should check it out. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Some guy running up from the beach, and he's all looks haggard and torn up, and then some guy starts chasing after him, and they do a close-up, and his lips are all sewn shut.
Sewn shut, yeah. And it's all black and white, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's something visceral and cool about it. I dig it. So probably more like a what was the movie with the big monster they never showed that Abrams produced but didn't direct?
Cloverfield.
I'm getting a Cloverfield vibe from this in that it's probably a Bad Robot side production that is not him, but he's interested in producing. So
right.
Probably what that is. It's not Star Wars. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Some people think it is. Whatever. Idiots. In my version, Luke Skywalker is birthed from the ocean. And bounty hunters have sewn together lips. That's Star Wars. All right. PlayStation 4 got a release date. Arrives November 14, 15th. I got an email from Amazon today saying, hey.
Yeah, pre-order now.
I already pre-ordered. So what it was saying to me was, hey, our previous expectation of delivery of January 3rd or whatever has been made better. It's now November 13th at the latest or something.
Oh, wow.
Sweet.
So I'm stoked. Mine's pre-ordered and coming.
Interesting. Like, just in time for the Thanksgiving Black Friday rush.
Yeah, big shock, right?
Woohoo!
Yeah, boy.
Xbox.
Same way with...
Or go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, it's all coming out in November.
Yeah, Xbox will be November. We don't know when, though. They haven't said. Or have they at Gamescom? I don't think they did.
I thought it was, like, within a week or two of a PlayStation 4.
Well, it's definitely the rumors. I don't know if they ever confirmed, but definitely confirmed from Sony. They actually got up on stage in Germany and said, yeah, this is our release date.
Jawohl, November 15th.
And they showed some cool stuff. I'm really excited. I'm sure
Steven,
they did
are
it.
You picking the box up?
I don't know yet. What should I get? Should I get Xbox One or PlayStation 4?
Well, Microsoft's doing so much flip-floppy right now that I don't know what they're doing. I mean, if they end up shaving $100 off this thing eventually because they've already changed so many of their selling points. I'm torn on that because a part of me says, well, yeah, make it cheaper and I'll buy that thing. But the other part of me says, do you guys have any actual vision or are you just going to change with every wind that blows? Like,
The Xbox thing is a wait and see for me. The PS4 is a definite purchase.
Yeah, that's how I'm looking at it. So
my son has been begging me for an Xbox because he's tired of the Wii.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but he's just like, I want an Xbox, Dad. I think it's because you can play Minecraft on Xbox.
Yeah.
So he's interested in that. So
wherever Minecraft is at is where the kids are going. PS4 will have Minecraft, so.
Ah, there we go. PlayStation 4 then. November 15th. Yeah. I'll punch some old woman in the Walmart at 12:01 a.m.
Out of my way.
Get out of my way, lady. It's looking really good and hot, and I'm pretty excited to get my hands on it. Yeah, it's very game focused, which is really what I want. So there you have it. Man of Steel arrives on Blu-ray on November 12th. And didn't we get this week was Star Trek week, wasn't it? Did we get
Yes, Star Trek is out early on iTunes right now. You can get it now today.
Yeah, that's where it was. I may have to I'm more and more inclined to not.
Spoiler alert, all you listeners.
Oh, yeah. Wrath of something. Wrath of,
yeah.
Let's see.
Thanks for spoiling Star Trek for me, Schleicher. I hate you.
You got a lot of heat for that, didn't you? That particular thing, you took a lot of heat
just
on that.
Just that one thing. Oh, well.
Oh, well. What are you going to do? Let's see. Man of Steel, November 12th, so that's coming.
Are you guys going to buy it?
I'll probably play it on my PS4. I don't know. I don't know if I care that much about that movie. I didn't hate it as much as Kurtz. I didn't love it as much as some. I just kind of felt like it was... I saw it, so I'm good. I don't feel like I need to relive it. But like Avengers, if this is what we're talking about, I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
The Blu-ray has like 4 hours of behind the scenes and bonus features.
Wow.
Nice.
That's a
lot.
You know,
frankly, I got to say, Kurtz kind of ruined it for me. Like I was, it's not like I loved the movie. It was okay, but now I kind of hate it. And I have to say, I was totally influenced by Kurtz's little diatribe that he went on.
Yeah, no, he made really good points, and there are points that made me. The more we talked about it, the more angry I got. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to watch it again with his thoughts in mind this time, and watch it from his perspective, and see if I change my mind. But I'll be buying this because I know my son wants to see it, and. Mm-hmm. Again, so we'll get it.
He enjoyed it, right, the first time?
Oh, he did. He really liked it. He was like, can we watch it again, Dad? I was like, no.
Good news or bad news, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie gets pushed back to August 8th, 2014. Mm-hmm. Originally, it was supposed to be, what, May or June?
Yeah, it was 3 months earlier. They got a three-month pushback on this.
Yeah, and this is the business with Jennifer...
stupid Megan Fox.
Megan Fox, yeah. I almost said Jennifer
creepy
Garner.
Thumbs and everything.
Yeah, is she bringing her thumbs to the party? Sweet.
Yes, she is.
Well, that's why they had to postpone it. They're straightening her thumbs out.
This is true. I have a feeling that I think those movies are just hard to make. They're freaking giant turtle dudes. It's stupid.
It's a giant ninja turtle.
Yeah, there's it's no a way great to make comic. It, like,
you can't make it awesome.
It's a great comic. Like, it's a great video game, and it's a great CGI kids movie. It's not a good live action thing. It never was, and it never will be. So,
some people would argue against that.
I know they would, but why would they? I've gone back and seen those 80s things. They are freaking bad.
See, but I'm
even
actually
with
one
vanilla
of the people
ice?
Who... yeah. I'm one of the people who actually loves these movies just because I love the property. I love the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I know it's campy and it's goofy, right. But I'll watch it, you know, I've got them on my iPad as we speak.
So you're cool with those movies with the puppet heads and all that? You're fine with
totally,
those?
Totally. I mean, the later ones, like by the time we got, what, was it Secret of the Ooze? Is that like, or was that the first one? I forget the order. Yeah. But the later ones got a little goofy. I really like the first one. It just reminds me of when I was a kid. And I can dig it.
So hold on. So was Vanilla Ice all up in that? When was that?
He did the Turtles rap song.
Oh, that's, it was a song.
Yeah.
And it was in the movie.
And he did a video and he's dancing with the turtles. And
that worked out really well.
I'm sure you can find it on YouTube, Scott.
Yeah. Way to go, buddy.
And now he's flipping houses.
Yeah. He is flipping houses.
I bet you if you ask Brian, he might be able to find a cover of that song.
Okay. I just remember one night he came on like Arsenio Hall or something like that. And it was after his bubble had burst. Everyone was like, all right, we are over Vanilla Ice. And he showed up with this new, like super dark, hard, ugly rap kind of thing to try to revive his career. It was seriously the most pathetic thing I ever watched in my life. So I'm glad he's flipping houses. It's a good, honest job.
It's the Vanilla Ice Ninja rap. Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go.
Yes, Go Ninja, Go Ninja.
It's on YouTube. Yeah. Sweet.
Stupid.
I don't care if it's pushed back if it means that they can make a better movie. But pushing it to the end of summer also doesn't sit well, as we've seen with Wolverine and Elysium and a couple of other movies that they hoped would be big hits in the last part of the summer.
Not a lot of... Despite Wolverine getting better reviews on Origins and being a better film overall, it sure didn't stir up a lot of money. It's too bad.
Not here in the U.S.
No. Yeah, it did well overseas, though, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's made its money back. I mean, it's not like it's a flop or anything.
It has that huge Jackman in it. He's popular among the kids.
Did you see him dead weighting 400 pounds?
No.
Have you seen that picture that he posted? He's like...
Deadlift 400 pounds.
Yeah, deadlifting like 400 pounds, getting in shape for, I don't know if it was getting in shape for the Wolverine movie or X-Men Days of Future Past or what.
Yeah.
But go look it up. You'll find it. I think he posted it on his Instagram or Twitter feed or one of those.
Well, I found Hugh Jackman deadlift. Oh, yeah. He's on 60 minutes.
Wow, look at that.
Wow.
That's a good way to blow an O-ring.
I don't know what this is.
I understand that you have three different sets of clothes for the different sizes of you.
There's boxes in my storage. Fat suits, skinny suits, normal suits.
You know what I like about him? That dude's pretty down to earth.
Oh, yeah.
Seems to be. Yeah.
Doesn't really. He's not. He hasn't let this Hollywood business get to his head too much, and I like that. I respect that. Let's see. Feige says Marvel movie United planned all the way out to 2021. What the hell's that?
The Marvel movie universe.
Oh,
they've got movies planned all the way out to 2021. Now, they haven't announced what they are, But they say, hey, we have these all set up so that, you know, and you have to keep in mind, as long as the bottom doesn't drop out, this is the direction we're going.
Okay, if you count out the stuff that they have, that Fox and Sony has.
I think they got 2017 or 2018 has been basically announced.
Okay, so beyond that, what's left, though? What do we got?
Oh, man, you've got a third Avengers movie, obviously. You've got Great Lakes Avengers. You can have all sorts. I mean, nobody has said boo about Doctor Strange yet, and I think a lot of people are excited about seeing a Doctor Strange movie. Mm-hmm. The Runaways, which is a great Brian K. Vaughan story set in the Marvel Universe, would be awesome as a movie. So I can't imagine that they would pass that up, especially for the young crowd. Mm-hmm. So who knows what they have planned out. And I'm betting that they've got 2 to 3 movies planned out each year through 2021. It doesn't surprise me. Because that's why Disney bought Marvel. They didn't buy it from Marvel for a comic book company. They bought it for all of the characters, the 5,000-plus characters that they could exploit for money.
Right.
And they've went on record as saying that. Well, not exactly that, but essentially that.
Right. Well, interesting.
It's a long time.
Yeah, it is long. Way long. Too long.
Shit.
Let's see. Marvel confirms Venom ending in October. So sad news if you're a Venom fan. Speaking specifically of Venom number 42, Bunn, who's the writer right now, says the final issue is very personal to me for a number of reasons that we cannot discuss, but we will once it's published. With the final issue, I want to weave in elements that we've been seeing from the beginning. Flash's struggle with alcoholism, his relationship with his dad, his injuries. This all, again, according to Bunn. Final quote was, all these things have made him who he is, unquote. Has anybody been reading?
I haven't, only tangentially through when the crossovers have happened with the Amazing Spider-Man and now Superior Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah,
I dropped off after about 10 issues with that.
Okay, so people who don't know, Flash Thompson in a wheelchair, they slap the Venom suit on him and they hire him to go do some crazy military stuff.
Yeah,
and then it's
actually a pretty cool premise. I mean, I actually enjoyed it. And I'm not even sure why. I guess just too many other books to read. It wasn't anything specific, but I did enjoy the story, at least the part that I got of it.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. More than just, hey, check him out, big bad evil anti-Spider-Man villain. Like I'm all about them exploring that.
Yeah, and there's a certain amount of time that he could wear the Venom suit before he has to get it taken off, otherwise it can take control of him, and it's really fleshed out really nicely.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe I should go back and read it.
Did McFarlane ever get the money he was kind of due for that character? He didn't really. Wasn't that part of the impetus for him leaving Marvel back in the day? Steven, you remember any of this? I remember there was a big deal about he was a co-creator of Venom, and I remember there was some talk that he was all pissed, or that character was the last straw. It's like, look, you're making all this money on this villain that you didn't have before, that we gave you, and you're not willing to give us any royalties based on that, so see you, we're out, we're doing Image.
I don't really remember the whole story behind what created Image and what the fallout was. I know that there's a lot of people still upset about stuff, but I also know that there's a lot of people collecting royalties from Marvel every time they do a movie featuring one of their characters.
That's true. I wish Jerry Conway was one of those guys. He doesn't get enough.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get on to some of the books that perhaps we've been reading, if any.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
All right. So Scott Kay's not here, obviously. I have not been reading a bunch. I've been reading a little series called Hearthstone, which is really a video game and not a comic. So there you have it. that game is great and ridiculous, and Blizzard has an enormous hit on their hands. And speaking of them, I did read their new Diablo series, which I got in kind of a collector's version that they sent for me for review, and it's real, real good. Oh, and I also just got, I haven't opened it yet, or read it yet, but it's World of Warcraft Bloodsworn. I'm really happy to be
on
this list.
From Wildstorm or whatever?
Yeah, DC's doing
something
it.
Else. Yeah.
And it's... let's see. Doug Wagner wrote it. Jeremy Rapak is the artist. Supposedly, I have an interview coming soon with these guys, which I'm looking forward to. Oh, and then I talked to Chris Metzen yesterday. He wants to get him and the team behind their latest sequel to the Transformers stuff they've been doing for IDW. They want to come on here, so we'll be talking about that soon.
That'd be awesome.
But anyway, I'm really impressed lately with the Blizzard game-based comics. They're way better than they have been. The art is better. The art is really cool in this Bloodsworn, and I really like the Diablo one as well. The stories are just better fleshed out. I feel like this is Blizzard, and they've made a real attempt internally, they've said, even to do this, but this is them really handing it off to really good, smart people, really good artists, and saying, look, we have a lot of lore we can flesh out here. Go for it. And they're writing some compelling stories. So I have been up to that. And that's full on straight up books, man. No digital versions of this. I've been
reminding
paper?
Me, Scott.
Paper, what? Man. Paper. Did, you ever Blizzard, seen paper? Sorry.
Did Blizzard sell or get sold not too long ago? What was the deal? Was something with Activision?
So Vivendi, the parent company who owned it's a long story how this all worked out, but Vivendi was a company in not France, wherever it is. Is it? No, maybe it is France. Whatever it is. They're a big multinational conglomerate, and one of the big parts, the things that they owned was Blizzard Entertainment. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then that rolled into Activision getting a part of that, and then them kind of owning a big chunk of Activision Blizzard. And then lately, none of their other arms have made any money except for the video game stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they decided to sell off their most profitable arm to pay out debt on everything else that's tanking.
Ah, okay.
So they've essentially sold it as a buyback for Activision and Blizzard, and the Blizzard end of it is a little less clear, but the Activision people, including Bobby Kotick, they all paid with their own money for a bunch of the stock to buy it back. So technically Activision Blizzard is now separate from Vivendi and no longer
well,
a
then,
part of that.
So I'm wondering then, you say that the comics are a lot better than what they used to be.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's because now there's some greater creative control over any of those properties
quite
than
possibly.
What they may have had before from the parent company.
Quite possibly. I think it's a combination of things. I think that's possible, although some of this quality shift happened before this deal was struck.
Oh, okay.
So you All saw right. some of that already happening, but I think that there's probably at least a sense of more freedom. They were always kind of given carte blanche. It's like, hey, Blizzard, we're not going to mess with your – whatever your company culture / magic that you guys do to make what you make, we're going to let you do that and not play with that too much because we don't want to ruin your formula, which I think is a really smart move, and that was smart of them. But yeah. also, in the meantime, you've seen Blizzard make a bunch of creative hires, both people directing projects, people in charge of other projects. Mickey Nelson there at Blizzard, who's been there for a long, long time, is now in charge of this whole effort of comic books and books and animated shorts and all this kind of stuff. And there's definitely been a explosion of that come out of them. So I feel like it's a combination. It's like they really want to do this, but also, and they want to do it with the right partnerships. That's another really important thing. You know, if somebody's good at this, like DC, for example, they're going to use DC, and they have relationships with new employees at Blizzard who used to work at DC. And so they got a lot of mm-hmm. smart people from publishing on comics and other things. So I think that's the main reason. But I'll bet shedding this big international thing hanging over your head probably is a good thing creatively all up and down the block for them.
And does that also mean that the World of Warcraft movie also is tied into all of this changeover?
Yes, in that how it was on stall for so long?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the reason that we finally have a director and we're talking scripts and they say they're in pre-production and all of this talk since Comic-Con – like actual progress, and there was a teaser at Comic-Con as well that never got leaked, which pisses me off because I want to see it.
I know.
I think that is all, again, a sign of them saying, yeah, we need to. I mean, I asked Chris Metzen the other day, point blank, which everyone will hear tomorrow in the instance, but I'll give him a preview now. I said, is this a concerted effort at Blizzard to extend the lore, to go a little bit crazy, that Burdens of Xiao Hao thing, which is what we talked about on that episode? That was not tied to content release. That wasn't tied to any kind of hey, we're releasing a patch, so here's some more content. This was something separate, totally unique, and had nothing to do with anything, not even really to do with their bottom line. It is just strictly, hey, we want to tell some more story. That feels like something they are making a real effort to do. His answer was a little vague on that. Says, well, story's always been important to us and other stuff here and there. But I think it's absolutely the case. In the game itself, you've got scenarios, which are basically storytelling vehicles. They're not anything more than that. They're not designed to be
right.
special gameplay experiences as much as they are lore-telling experiences. There's scrolls to gather all around the world. There's all these things to do now that just tell story. So I think that Blizzard sees the writing on the wall, which is be a narrative-focused company.
Right.
The games will follow, but you just really flesh out that narrative and create that creative zeitgeist, and then you're going to succeed more. And I think it's an awesome move. I think it's great.
Well, if it's working there and it's working in the comics, then good for them.
Yeah, totally into it. So I'm catching up on a few other odds and ends here and there, but nothing really notable. Mark, what are you reading?
Well, I finished up Sweet Tooth finally. And the great thing was, right as I was on maybe the last five issues, the one of those Comixology sales popped up, and I think it was like 99 cents for all of Sweet Tooth issues. So I was like, oh, sweet. So got the last five issues, 99 cents a piece. That was great. Great story. I mean, I'm finding myself with the books that I'm reading now that the more complete stories where the writer had a story to tell and when the story was over, it was over, are so much more satisfying to me, and I'm gravitating toward these things as opposed to, like, I don't know. I mean, I love The Walking Dead, but I'm kind of just – it's getting long in the tooth for me, and it's something that I think could have been so much more – so much better of a story if it was done with a concise beginning, middle, and end. And it just seems to be going on and on like a zombie that won't die.
Right.
But, you know, still, I enjoy the book, but I'm finding myself gravitating to these Why the Last Man, mm-hmm. Scalped, you know, things that actually have an ending and a story to tell. And when it's done, I miss that world. But that's what makes me feel it was a really good experience having been in there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I haven't thought of that way because you're right. Like if you start Spider-Man, you're either in for the long haul or be done when the current writer and artist leave or something.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And there's so much of that out there that you'll never run dry. You know?
Yeah. And I find that it's a writer must have, and that's why they have to switch writers constantly. And as a reader, you know, you're just kind of going on this roller coaster of one arc to another and not ever really getting anywhere in a lot of these stories. So our classics, like you, Spider-Man's a great example.
Yeah.
You know, but something as poignant as The Walking Dead, I think would have been so much more effective as maybe a 100 issue run. And then that's it.
That's originally what it was supposed to be, as 100 issues.
See, and it's super successful, so they have to keep doing it. But as the writer, what's he have to do? He has to keep coming up with shit to get in their way. And another asshole, the next town over, who's a maniac. You know, and it's a lot of the themes we've seen before. It's just the stakes keep getting higher, and another person dies. And yeah, so anyway, I'm finding myself enjoying those complete stories. And Sweet Tooth was one of those that just had a nice ending that capped it off well, and I felt like it was a good experience.
It's the feeling I have about things like, you know, I wish Hawkeye, the current run of Hawkeye, which we've all loved.
Yeah.
There's a piece of me when you see something new and so fresh on a take on a character that may have already existed, you kind of wish there was an end game for that. So when they're done, be done, and let's not try to, you know, pound it into the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And Lemire has another book that just started. It's actually just a number one now. It's Trillium. And it's going to be like a mini series. So when I'm choosing a new book to start reading, I actually tend to stay away from a lot of number ones, especially if I know it might be ongoing for a long time, because I would rather pick it up in trades or whatever. But if I see this is only going to be an 8-issue run or a 10-issue run, I'll pick that number one up because I know that this writer has to end the book in a period of time. So he's going to wrap up the story. So I'm actually excited about that, about Lemire's Trillium now. Haven't actually read it, but looks like it's going to be good.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah, so there's that. I've been doing a little gap filling. Went to see the Wolverine movie and decided I should go back and read the original Claremont Miller arc.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of do a little comparison. And it's it was okay, but it's your classic 80s style comic where, like, everyone has to open up with Wolverine doing his, like, I'm a badass. I can't die. I'm the best at what I do. I've got adamantium and claws. And then they get into the story. So it's like the way they wrote back then was very different than the way they write today, where they assume you know something. At least they don't have to. Every issue doesn't have to give me the full background of who Wolverine is. But it was interesting. I assume you both read that.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day. Yeah.
Well, we read it just recently on the podcast. So.
Oh, you did? Oh, you, know, you went I back and...
it was about 2 months ago. 2 months ago, I think.
Oh, that's interesting. It's funny you say that because the movies have this problem now where they feel like they have to retell the origin every time. Mm-hmm, it'd be nice if they evolved the way the comics have, so 10 years from now, they're not doing that anymore. They start doing what the comics do today, which is, he's got claws and it's this stuff in him, and you all know that. So on to the next bit.
Right.
Which would be nice.
Yeah, and frankly, the comic, I don't know, it was okay. It was interesting for me to see, having seen the movie first. I was actually story-wise a little disappointed at how simplistic the story was in the comic version, but it also told me how much imagination the writer or the person who wrote the script for the movie had to bring to it to make it something that, you know, people these days would want to go and watch an actual movie on. Mm-hmm. So it's yeah. So it was okay.
Okay, not bad.
Yeah, and the last thing, I don't have much to say about it, but speaking of gap filling, this is the great thing about being new old to comics and having a lot of things I need to catch up on. Reading Sandman.
Good.
Still in volume one right now. I got it into trades, but definitely enjoying it. Really good stuff.
It's really good, man. The problem with Sandman is this. We're so used to now such high production value on colorism in books that you look back in those. Like, it's just the same with the Swamp Thing. What's his name? Swamp Thing run. Can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Frank Miller.
No, not Frank Miller. Mm-hmm. The other guy. Yeah, the Killing Joke guy. What's wrong with me? Watchmen.
Same way. Someone in the chat room will shout it out.
What's wrong with me? Harry Caveman Man. hates everyone. V for Vendetta. Alan Moore. Jeez.
Alan Moore, there you go.
How do you forget Alan Moore's name? Anyway.
Sorry, everybody, we lost.
That book is awesome, and the story is incredible, and it's one of my favorite things ever, but man, we've gotten better at the tech since then. So I had that problem with Sandman, but...
That was the thing that stopped me from reading it any sooner, was I would just flip through, and it doesn't immediately grab me when I see the art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But once you get into it and you start getting the story, then the art just almost becomes secondary to the story I'm reading. So.
Yeah, plus that stuff's starting to take on a kind of a retro nostalgic feel to it a little bit, so it's easier
to do. I find that a lot of the weird art that's out there, like once you're in the world and you get your brain into it, you see it as its own identity and you get past it. But sometimes it's a little tough to swallow at first.
All right, cool. Well,
Now, are you reading this digitally or how are you reading this?
For Christmas, my family likes to buy me paper trades. So I actually get stacks of these things for new series that I haven't read yet. So I actually look forward to reading them in paper form. But then once I want to continue on, then I go onto the iPad and catch up wherever I left off.
That's cool.
Because I was going to say, if you ever get a chance, and I'll mention this here in a moment too, if you ever get a chance to read the Absolute editions of any of the DC books,
so good.
These oversized prints, oh my gosh, they're wonderful to look at. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Really good. I have that for a couple of them here. I have the Hush version of that.
Yeah, and this, what is it, the final, or not, the New Frontier.
New Frontier is so good. This day, Steven's finest recommendation to me was New Frontier. I love it. I'll pull that out. Sometimes I just pull that out and read like a passage. It's like our Bible around here. Just whip it out and go, oh, here's the bit where Martian Manhunter's watching TV. Let's just read that together. I love that book. You're right, though. You can't ask for better quality than those.
And the nice thing for people who have cruddy eyes like Scott and I, those Absolute editions are really nice to see the detail in the words.
Yeah, it's true. Nice big fat fonts and stuff.
I could read comics again.
Not so bad. All right, Steven, what are you reading? What are you doing?
Not much. Always so busy, especially this time of year. I did pick up, and we read it this week on the Major Spoilers podcast, the first volume of 100 Bullets. I'm now into the second volume of 100 Bullets, and I'm liking the story. It's fine. It feels a little dated. It happened in 99 is when the series kicked off. So by the time I'm reading this, we're in 99-2000 territory. So there's still some dated stuff in there, but I still like it. It's an engaging story. A finite story. It's only got 100 issues. So if you ever wanted to pick it up and read it, you can get through it pretty easily.
Because it's one issue per bullet, right? Is the way the story works.
Not quite that way. But guy shows up, says, hey, you've been wronged. You've been falsely accused, whatever. In this briefcase is all the proof that you need to confirm your suspicions or prove your innocence or whatever. There's also an untraceable gun with 100 untraceable bullets. Do with the information what you want. And that's kind of the premise. And it gets a little bit deeper later on, or so I'm told. So I'm interested in exploring this through all 100 issues, reading them now through Comixology, which is nice. I just got in the mail a couple of weeks ago. I haven't even taken it out of the box yet, but I'm really excited about IDW's Artist Editions. I don't know if you guys have seen this. This is where they take the original ink work before it's colored and everything. So sometimes you still see pencils underneath, and sometimes you see the white out where they were changing words. Their artist edition, I've got the artist edition of Mark Schultz's Xenozoic Tales, which is like Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, post-apocalyptic time period where dinosaurs are now ruling the earth again, and man is driving around in all these 1950s and 60s vehicles and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. If you haven't seen Mark Schultz's work, it is phenomenal. And to see it in this huge oversized edition, I can't wait to open the box and take a dive at that.
Very cool.
Finally, Batman number 23 came out last week. This is Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo telling the year zero story of Batman and how he became Batman. And this is the issue where he finally has the moment where he's sitting in a room and looking at his father's bust and saying, "Father, I don't know what I should do." And then has a vision of bats and, "I will become a bat."
Wow. And, so I'm worried about this issue. I have been since it was announced. How do you feel about
it? Have you read it?
No.
It was okay, but it feels like, hey, Batman becomes Batman.
Again.
Again. Yeah. And everybody was like really saying, oh, this is going to be the phenomenal breakthrough issue. And it was an okay issue because Batman just gets the crap beat out of him by the Red Hood gang.
Yeah.
And he starts hallucinating and sees a bunch of things. And then he sees the bat on top of his father's bust and has that moment that we all know. So it was kind of a little letdown. I was expecting a little something more the way it was hyped from DC and others. But it's a solid story, and Greg Capullo's art is fine.
I don't think good. You know, those guys, they're hard to beat, but another origin story. This is my problem. It's like,
One has been really interesting. So the thing that I want to see next is, as Batman, as he becomes Batman, how does he take and finish off the Red Hood gang, and does that in this new 52 truly lead to the birth of the Joker? So I'm interested in seeing that. It's probably one of my favorite Batman books that's out right now. Yeah. The only other one came out this week, the Batman Beyond universe. People might want to check that out.
Yeah, I haven't read any of the comic treatment. I watched the show for a while. Didn't it start as the show? Like, there were never comics before the show, right?
No, there were no comics before the show, but there have been several different iterations of this. May be the third or fourth volume of Batman Beyond. They also were doing and this may be, and I have to go back and double check. I thought that they were doing a Batman Beyond Universe digital first, where they basically release three or four issues digitally online for 99 cents, and then a month later it gets released in print. So I think that's what this print edition is. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. And Batman Beyond is always kind of cool, especially how they tie that into the greater DC universe and try to make continuity work really well. So that's a fun series.
No, I loved the show, and I always thought it was a really cool idea to take Batman to the future like that. And then I just wasn't sure how the translation would go to comics, back to comics.
Yeah, it works. It works really well. They did a Superman Beyond for a while, and then they were trying to set up a Justice League Beyond, but I don't know if anything ever became of that. It doesn't look like it, but it's still a fun story set in the future.
All right. Well, let's check out a couple of emails.
If we should fail, our volunteer will be dead within minutes.
Hello from Canada, dorks, says Michael. First off, let me lick your boots. I'm not sure which is worse. By saying I really enjoy your podcast. I was a huge comic reader up to my young adult life when everything changed. I'm loving the suggestions to read and can't wait to rent some more new comics soon. I think he means read. But when he says rent, maybe he's talking about comics.
Yeah, maybe comics he listened to the show.
Probably, yeah. He says, anyway, I hope you dorks have the time to read Modo, Ember's End. It's a graphic novel based on the Old West. It might not be released yet, but I got a copy coming through Indiegogo, which we'll have a link here and try to put that in the show notes. So got some other links here as well. All he had to say to me was it's a graphic novel based in the Old West, and I'm in. So I will definitely check that out. Michael,
I'm going over to the web to the Indiegogo page right now and looking it up. It's already passed its goal.
Yeah.
Surpassed it by $2,000. So it looks like it's by Arthur Slade and Christopher Steininger.
Do you feel like Indiegogo has become more commonly used for comic books than Kickstarter lately?
No. No,
okay.
I think it's both equal. I think more people are going through Indiegogo, and I don't know what the split is, who gets how much money. The nice thing about Indiegogo is if you don't get fully funded, you can still collect the money and use it to partially fund your project.
Yeah, you get whatever they did fund. So if you got $5,000 out of 50, you'll still get the $5,000.
Yeah, so I think that's probably why a lot of independent creators are going to Indiegogo. Fund Anything, Kickstarter all have different things, so it seems to be relatively spread out. I mean, Gail Simone is just finishing up her Leaving Metropolis series through Kickstarter. So there's some good things that are coming out every day. There's just too much to keep track of everything.
But Kickstarter is still the brand everybody knows. Like, that's the big game.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Jason Rodetta said, I wanted to recommend a couple of books for you guys. I'm a huge Green Lantern fan and think the best spot to jump to in the Green Lantern Rebirth is the Green Lantern Rebirth trade by Geoff Johns.
Sure.
I know you guys aren't fans. I don't know if I'm not fans. Johns or of Green Lantern. Not sure which he means. I think we all like Geoff Johns, don't we?
I got nothing against him.
That's maybe you. Okay. Maybe you're the one that said you Yeah, that may have been it. You were kind of not down, but you kind of like, eh.
I'm okay with what he's done with Green Lantern. It's really good. I don't care what he's done with the Flash in making Wally West disappear from everything and bringing back Barry Allen. I think that's my biggest gripe. Yeah. But otherwise, no, I really don't have a Geoff Johns problem.
Okay. Specific Geoff Johns problem?
Yeah, I don't have a specific Geoff Johns problem. He's good. His Green Lantern run is really, really good.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's a great jumping on point in the series and leads to some of the most interesting storylines in the series. If you also haven't read it yet, you should read Justice by Alex Ross. I have read that. It's fantastic. Jim Kruger and Doug Brothwaite. Let's see. The trade is amazing artwork, and the story asks some really interesting questions as to what a hero's responsibilities are and should be. It's also because of this book that I'm a fan of Aquaman or Superman, as it presents them in a way I never thought of before. As I already said, I love the show. Thanks for the insight into the business, Jason. You're welcome, Jason. And yeah, those all sound like good recommendations. I feel like the Aquaman thing, or no, what's the one that, is it Aquaman? Somebody's run with Aquaman right now, supposed to be crazy good. Is that the one? Okay.
I think Geoff Johns' Aquaman.
Did you read any of that?
I did the first couple of issues, and it was okay, but I lost interest quickly.
Okay.
I read it too and lost interest only because of my general lack of knowledge for the character, but sure. I thought it was well done. I mean, for Aquaman, the way it was portrayed, he's kind of a badass.
Does he have the long hair, the goatee, and the cut-off arm?
Okay. He's a slim trim and ready to kick your ass.
Because you remember the one, I mean, there was that when they were trying to make him more appealing and they cut his arm
he had
off.
They hook a hook and then he had a psychic hand or something with water. Yeah, and
he did, and he had long, like Nickelback hair and had a goatee.
Hair.
Yep. Yeah, that was great.
I still think the best Aquaman is the Batman Brave and the Bold. If you haven't seen that iteration of Aquaman, you're missing out on some great stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I think the old Super Friends Aquaman is my favorite. Hello, gang, says Peter. Actually says Das Gang. He says, I gave Hawkeye a try after hearing your praise on something like three separate podcasts. After two comics, I am absolutely hooked and already on the third, and so far it is my favorite. Not too kiddy, just enough adult. It really does hit that perfect tone with a healthy sprinkling of comedy, says Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah, still, for my money, my favorite mainstream, if you want to call it that, mainstream comic this year at all. Like, nothing's come close in terms of, you know, here's a Marvel series and you're going to either love it or not. It for whatever reason, it is the most independent feeling of all the Marvel stuff right now.
Well, yeah, because he's not dressing up as Hawkeye every single issue and going out and fighting crime. He's dealing with his own personal issues at home.
Yeah, but even the approach to the cover art, like everything is so graphic and different.
Yes. Yes.
It's just it's a real treat. So I'm really glad Peter and others have discovered it because we like it a lot as well. If you'd like to email us and send us your recommendations, your thoughts, whatever, send them in. comicdorks@gmail.com. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is it. We have completed yet another podcast. Steven Schleicher, always busy with cool stuff. Anything in particular you'd like to point people's eyeballs to?
Ben Affleck is Batman.
Yeah. I mean, you know what?
Oh yeah,
you think he's gonna have to growl, right? He's gonna have to do the voice, right?
We'll see.
Because what's his name? I always hated his. It was terrible. His Batman voice was awful. So yeah,
it was MajorSpoilers.com.
Yeah, people should go there. Anything else? Let's see. Major Spoilers on Twitter, of course.
Yep.
Always good stuff coming from Steven. Follow one of those two things, and you'll find out everything that's going on. Mark Spagnuolo, what's going on in the world of woodworking? Your book's doing well, I hear.
We had the pre-order sale for a period of time, had a little bonus that we were giving people and set a goal for ourselves and beat it by like 50%. So,
oh, is that over? Because I must have missed it.
You must have missed it. We'll hook you up. Don't worry about it. But yeah, so the pre-order went really well and absolutely thrilled. First time with a real publisher, so I'm trying to pull out all the stops and make sure we get as many of these books sold as possible. So pretty exciting.
Very exciting indeed. All right, let's get out of here. And Scott Kurtz, hope things are going all right. We'll see him next time on a new episode of Comic Dorks. In the meantime, visit us on the web, comicdorks.com. All our old episodes are there. Links to other stuff, whatever you might need, are available there. You can email us, comicdorks@gmail.com. On Twitter, follow us @ComicDorks. More great shows just like this at frogpants.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Mark, for Steven, and for Scott. We'll see you next time.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.